This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
He brought back!
The Shadow Fold. A scar. Tore our country in two.
What the hell are you doing here?
I'll make it. Promise.
To destroy it, we need a miracle.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvin. Today, we are going to be reviewing something of a hot property, right? It's been making a number of headlines. Fans have gotten really invested. We are going to be talking about Netflix's Shadow and Bone.
So Shadow and Bone is an adaptation of a wildly popular young adult series by Leigh Bardugo. And so it's been really greatly anticipated, the TV series. Many of them are calling it the next big fantasy series after Game of Thrones. I think what you need to remember when you go into it is that it is very much a YA adaptation. And if that's not your thing, you're probably going to find this a very hard sell. However, if you like all the tropiness that comes with watching a YA adaptation, then you might actually really love it.
Yeah, it wasn't my thing, like, at all. Like, I tried doing the first few episodes. I'm not even kidding, and it is not like making up this for the show, but I kept falling asleep. Like, every episode, I would fall asleep, like, halfway, and because Netflix has a thing where it plays the next episode automatically, I would wake up and not know which episode I'm in. So, has it been, like, 5 minutes? Has it been, like, 10 minutes or half an hour? So, in that sense, I was the fantasy trope because there was no sense of time. But I couldn't keep track of where I was or who was doing what. And, yeah, it was that kind of show for me.
So I've been putting this off, but I think it's time. Let me try to explain what Shadow and Bone is about. So it centers on Alina Starkov, who is an orphan turned cartographer in a sort of war that is happening in the fictional land of Ravka. It's not entirely clear what the war is about. So I don't think that they ever really kind of lay it out. But suffice to say, it is a war-torn country. She is doing that. And stop laughing. Okay. It's a war-torn country. She's off doing that. She also has a best friend who grew up with her in the orphanage. But the story really takes off when it turns out that she may have magical powers, essentially, although they insist on not calling it magic. And all this is happening amidst the backdrop of there being a real separation, almost like a separation of caste, between regular folks and the ones who go as Grisha. And Grisha are what we would recognize as magic, but they're essentially people who can manipulate matter.
As one of the characters would say, they're not actually doing magic. It's science that we don't yet understand.
Small science, they say.
Small science, that's right. I'll start with the things I like, right? I love the way everything looks. So the mythology of this series, rather, I think the look, the inspiration, the geography, the culture is very much inspired by Russian and Eastern European cultures. And then there's occasionally stuff that comes from other parts of the world. But I love how everything looks. I love the attention to detail into getting that feel, people's names, the names of the different factions, even the royalty. Everything is very much inspired by those kinds of cultures. And that was really nice because it's not a terribly common trope, particularly in TV shows, even though books have been doing it for a while.
Also, they created languages, which I think is cool.
Yes.
So a lot of the languages that they're speaking in the show were created for the show in the same way. I think they actually asked the same person who came up with Dothraki. So it's actually in that same sort of fictional language kind of way, quite lovely to hear everybody speaking different tongues.
And they do a really good job of casting a really great diverse cast. I know that they did sort of extensive auditions and found actors and actresses from all over the world of all kinds of backgrounds, and it shows because it really creates a sort of very rich and vivid feel for the show. Unfortunately, I think the plot doesn't necessarily hold up to that kind of richness. So it often feels like the show spends a lot of time world building, monologuing, explaining, you know, this is what this is how that works, this is why these people do this. But then the things that are actually happening on screen are never particularly as interesting as all of that, or never particularly that distinct. If you've watched a lot of fantasy, you would have seen these things happen so many times.
I think that was the biggest problem with the show for me. It felt like fantasy fan fiction. So someone who's read like way too many fantasy books and not particularly good fantasy books, trying to do fiction on those books. There's so many tropes. Like the moment, like within the first 30 minutes, someone says half-breed. And I'm like, the moment you drop a half-breed, it goes back to those sort of very template fantasy stories. And then the thing about science, where it's like, it's not magic. It's some sort of science and manipulating matter and stuff. We've seen that like done a dozen times in a dozen shows. Thor did that. And that was like 11 years ago. And it's the use of music, the use of the kinds of language, the war, even the creature designs, when they do show the creatures, which is quite scarce in the first few episodes, I think, even the creature designs is very, very, very conventional. It's like the stuff you've seen in like Cloverfield and a bunch of other fantasy stories or sci-fi stories. So I think that was it for me. There was nothing new, bits and pieces that I might have liked here and there, but nothing new for me to go like, oh, okay, I'm interested in, you know, in investing and seeing where this goes.
Couple of things. I realized I forgot to mention The Fold, which is the shadow, right, in the title, because the land, the war-torn land of Ravka is essentially cut in half by this giant sort of shadowy space in which nothing can live and which is populated by the creatures that you just mentioned, Arvind, the Volkra. The second thing that I want to say is I agree with all of you. I found this show really annoying. I really liked it. So I have serious issues with, I think, me more than I have with the show. And I'm quite troubled by it, but also I really enjoyed it. So I think especially the first couple of episodes were difficult. Because that's when the world building feels like it's at its height. It's you need to explain so much about where we are, why these characters are like this, you know, where we find ourselves. And all this is before we get to, we haven't even talked about the antagonist. So there's just so much stuff that they're trying to pack into this, this series of episodes, right? So I think the first few episodes I was watching and kept watching primarily because we were going to talk about it. Then it picked up steam. And then I found myself thinking about like, oh, I wonder what Alina is going to do. And then I found myself doing separate research. And then I found myself visiting Instagram. And then I was like, oh, I see, I've become a fan, even though I continue to be annoyed.
Now that Lynn has broken open the confession book, I binged it. I binged it over the course of a weekend. And the same, I watched the first two episodes. I was kind of like, meh, I'm not sure what everyone's talking about. I need to plug through this thing. But there I was, 4 a.m., wondering if I could squeeze in another episode because I just needed to know what General Kerrigan was going to do next. So it's that kind of show. And I don't know whether that's also partly because I do like YA. I do like YA fantasy and not even quality YA fantasy. There was a time in my life when I loved any type of YA fantasy, right? And this really hits all those points. It hits the love triangle. It hits the dark brooding anti-hero. It hits the plucky yet not yet fully realizing her power heroine. So I think it's that, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think there's a very particular audience that they've made the show for, and I think that audience, as far as I can tell from all the fan forums and discussions online, they're so excited by the show, and I can see why if I get off of my adult critic high horse.
I mean, I wanted to like the show. It's got everything that I would have loved in a show. I like YA stuff because you don't have to invest a lot and then you can detach from like young adult or teenage drama. You know, you can just watch it from afar. And it's got all those tropes. And you know, you guys know that I don't have like a lot of standards when it comes to movies. I like a lot of like bad films. So I don't know why I couldn't get hooked onto like any of the stories or the characters. I think one of the main problems was that I couldn't follow any particular story. It keeps switching between like timeline A or timeline B. And I only got to know that there were different timelines like in episode 3. And then I think I read somewhere that they were following like different books or something like that. So I felt like, have you ever spoken to someone who isn't into the MCU? And then you're having a conversation with them about the MCU and the look on their face. So that was my face throughout the series because I had no idea what is happening or who is doing what. And that was my biggest problem. It's just a lack of, I couldn't latch on to any particular thing.
We're talking today about Shadow and Bone, which is an 8-episode season that's dropped on Netflix. It's based on young adult fantasy novels written by Leigh Bardugo, and it's kind of been very internet popular. I'm curious whether you've watched it and did you like it? You can let us know and join the Ashamed Fans Corner with Sharmila and I, or join the I Really Don't Get the Fuss room of Arvin. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us, of course, at BFM Radio.
BFM 89.9, the business station.
What are you? Answer the question. What are you?
A map maker, sir.
Our map maker. Well, you and I are going to change the world.
Hi, everybody. This is Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvin. Tonight, we are reviewing Shadow and Bone. I wanted to talk a bit about the performances because it's a big cast. It's the story kind of gets spread out quite a fair bit, right? At different points, you have different people engaged in entirely separate activities. Sometimes they don't even dovetail. And you're not exactly sure when. You know that it will, but you're not sure when. And so I think watching the show switch around, one of the main challenges is that you need to have performances or characters interesting enough for people to want to follow. And I think it takes a while. For me personally, it took a while for those characters to actually develop and for me to think, oh, okay, we're back here. I don't mind, or I'm interested, as opposed to, ah, we're back here. Yeah, you know, like, why are we switching away?
That's actually both the show's greatest strength and biggest flaw, I think. The fact that there are definitely some people, some pairings that you're super excited about and constantly want to be with. And then there are others whom you're just like, oh God, how long is this part going to take? And that never goes away. There are some characters that I just didn't find very compelling at all. And every time the show would kind of focus on them, I'd find myself just wondering, is this why I didn't like the show when I first started watching it? But then I think some of that has to do with performance in terms of actors' capability as well. So Ben Barnes plays General Kerrigan, who's kind of like the broadly the mysterious anti-hero character. He's great. And so anything that he's in, I was really excited to watch. The lead, Jesse May Lee, who is really a fresh face. And initially I found her a little uninteresting, but as the show went on, I found her more and more interesting, and therefore I found it more and more interesting to spend time in her company. But I really wanted to say that the people I enjoyed the most was actually this group of people called the Crows, and they're made up of this like ragtag group of conmen, and they are probably the most fun in the whole show. And I kept wishing every time we cut to them, I wanted to see more of them. I would in fact see a whole show around them. And I think that's because they actually come from, as you said earlier, Arvin, they actually come from a sort of an offshoot series of books that actually just is about them. So some of this, I think, has to do with the show trying to put together characters and storylines that happen in different books. And so we find some things happening simultaneously that are more interesting than others.
I also just want to leap in and say that I think part of the Crow's appeal is the chemistry, because they're a three-person gang, essentially. And they actually have really nice interplay and chemistry, which took a while to build. I don't think it was immediate either, but towards the latter half of the show, you're like, oh, I guess get it.
I think my favorite parts were with Ben Barnes, like by far. So I've been a fan of him since Prince Caspian. Then he was in Punisher. I loved him in Punisher. Here, it's not so much about his acting or his performance. It's just the fact that he knows he's Ben Barnes. Like, he is completely and fully aware.
Fantasy actor extraordinaire.
Yeah, he knows what he looks like. And like, that man is just like flexing that jaw, you know, for like everyone watching. He knows what he's doing. And I think just seeing him do that and be aware of his presence, that he is playing this mysterious figure and stuff. It's just like, it's quite fun to see. Anyone else? I don't know if I could pluck out anyone else who stood out in the series, but I would say it's worth watching for Ben Barnes alone.
I did want to say I wish they had kept the mystery or the sort of grayness of his character going for longer. Because I think the show too quickly concluded what his character was. And I feel like there's very little mystery left by the end of the first season.
I had concluded. I had concluded.
You knew where it was going.
But that, I think, perhaps... So my thing about the show, and it's similar to what I think about Ben Barnes as well, is I wonder whether, with Ben Barnes, I'm pretty sure, I wonder whether the show knows what it is. So I think that the reason why I started getting into it was because I suspected that the show knows what it is. It's not trying to be sort of, kind of grand, the world is at stake, let us lead a revolution of Hunger Games, for example. It's not trying to have those sort of political speeches and overtones. Instead, it is sort of this... the world is great. I did really like the world. So I think that it knows that it has a very strong world in which to set everything in. And after that, it leaned really heavy on the fantasy and to some degree the cheese. And I think that's what I liked about it. And I hope that the show was doing that intentionally, because I did really enjoy that in the same way that I was going to say that perhaps Ben Barnes gave the show gravitas, but that's the wrong word, because he's actually in there kind of, it's quite a scenery chewing performance in many ways. It's quite hammy. And I liked that, because I think that if you're going to be someone called the Shadow Summoner, then, you know, be what you are.
Oh, his other name is the Darkling, by the way.
See what I mean? So,
there is no version of his name that isn't hammy. No, I agree. I think this show, much like Bridgerton, is one of those shows that knows what it's doing. It knows when it's coming out. It knows who its audience is. It doesn't need to be the Hunger Games, an allegory for, you know, authority or whatever. It really is just a fairly fluffy but solidly built fantasy series. And given the kind of reception it's getting, perhaps not everything needs to try to be Game of Thrones.
You know what I would have wanted, though? More foundation with the two leading characters, like their friendship. Mal and what is the Sun Summoner's name?
Alina.
So between them, I always feel like you can't flashback your way around a friendship. Like, it has to happen organically, and it needs time, and you need to actually feel like a bond between them. There was too much of like wordiness and too much of explanation and too many cutting back to flashback scenes for us to understand like, oh, these people are friends and they love each other. I didn't like that. I didn't feel anything for the two. And I feel like that whole basis and that whole foundation wasn't working as well as they thought it was working.
Oh, same for the Darkling's past as well. It was just sort of like, here's 20 minutes to explain this like grand narrative.
The show hinges, I would say, a fair amount of episodes on a cut that is on Alina's hand. And the way they build it up, you really think like, oh, you know, this is going to be some great story. And then it happens and you're like, ah, so it was the story I thought. You know, and I think, but that's kind of the Alina Mal story, right? It's kind of like that. They really do just rely on the fact that, they're childhood friends. Oh, they experienced childhood trauma and you're supposed to just get that. But I think part of that is also the passivity of Alina. So I think that if people find the show hard going, and especially if they have not read the books and therefore don't know what to expect, I don't know whether on television there is still a desire for a very passive female hero. I think if we look at the female heroes or heroines who have really made their mark on our TV screens. They tend to have more spunk, more personality, more difficulty. Even someone like Offred, who is by nature and by design of the system passive, is not passive at all. She's cursing away in her head. But with Alina, she's just very passive. And it takes a while for that sort of spunk and spirit to build up. And I think that again contributes to the show's slow start.
And I think it's only really towards the last two episodes, maybe, where Alina starts feeling like she is a whole person, a person beyond just a pawn being moved around by everyone. And you know, the show kind of ends on that note. And I feel like the second season might be more about her coming into herself, which leads me to ask you guys the obvious question. Would you watch the second season? Because you know what? I feel like I definitely would. I feel like if it was more of this, I would 100% binge the second season and hate myself a little bit the morning after.
I'm ready for four. I will give myself four seasons of this. I don't know, okay? I finished all eight episodes and then I wanted season two. I did want it right away. And I thought about these very surface characters for days after. So yep. I don't know what's happening to me, but I'm in it for the ride.
I'm going to have to figure out season one first. And I have to figure out whether I've actually seen all of season one. And then maybe I'll decide season two. But at the moment, no. I'm like tapping out.
Unless you need a nap.
Yeah, exactly. If I need a nap, then season two for sure.
The Darkling will summon shadows for you. I don't know. The show has a layer of silliness that I find appealing, I think. And again, if it knows that that's what it's doing, I appreciate it. So yeah, we've been talking today about Shadow and Bone, which has been so popular and anticipated and loved. And I think that we are sort of dissenting voices a little bit on this because the critical reception has been very great. But let us know what you think. Have you seen Shadow and Bone? Were you someone who read the books and now you're watching the show? What's that like? Let us know. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, and of course, write to us at movies@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.